Etius Perkei Mishnah Vav 5-6. And now we return back to the main topic of our Masechta, which is various Tanaim testifying about their traditions. So we've left Beis Hillel Meshamai behind us. And this is going to be Akavya ben Mahalalel, one of the most leading, I'll call it, Tanaim of the early Tanaic period. What we know about him in truth is really limited to this Mishnah and his Shittas here, as well as the very famous Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak of Pirkei Avos, the Histakel B'Shloshal Devarim, Venata Baladei Avera Mishnah, and one other Mishnah in the Goyim. Be that as it may, here Akavya ben Mahalalel Heid Arba Devarim. He testified regarding four things, which we'll see momentarily. But before we do, Amrulo, we learn a little about the dialogue that happened between these people. The Chacham of his generation there in the Kerem B'Yavna said to him, Akavya, Chazor b'cha b'arba devarim shayisa omer, if you would just back down from these four shitas that you have, these four opinions you have, and not pass like them, v'nascha av bezdin l'Yisrael, then we would appoint you to be the av bezdin of Yisrael. The av bezdin meaning the number two position in terms of the hierarchy of authority in the Jewish people, second in the Sanhedrin behind the Nasi. But in truth, the Nasi oftentimes was like a political, diplomatic, temporal leader, and therefore not necessarily the Gadol Hador. So this would be, being the av bezdin, would make him sort of the Gadol Hador, potentially. So we'd appoint you to that position, but only if you backed down. In other words, he had variant opinions. The Sanhedrin didn't agree with him. They felt that, you know, this was somehow inappropriate to point him as the av bezdin if he held these opinions. And if you'll ask, well, how does this work in terms of like things like Zak and Mamre, I'll just remind you that these opinions are about previous cases. They're not talking about something that's in the Bezdin now. If there be a Sanhedrin having to rule a particular real-life case now as opposed to a theoretical case of the past, they would hear the case, they would have a vote, Ninu Mugamru, and then the majority opinion would rule. And after that, Acharam Lahatos, you go with the majority, it would become forbidden for Akavya to paskin like the minor, like against the Sanhedrin. But the Sanhedrin isn't dealing with a real-life case here. They're talking about cases in the past, and therefore it's theoretical. Therefore, we could have different opinions. But they felt if he doesn't back down from his opinions, then we can't appoint him. So based on that, Amar Lahen Mutav Li Lehikare Shota Kol Yamai. He says, it's better for me, I'd prefer it, if everyone calls me a dope for the rest of my life. V'lo la'asol sha'achas rasha lefnei amakom. And not to be considered even for an instant to be wicked in the eyes of Hashem. Meaning, if I had this Masorah on these four issues that I got from my Rebbeim, I can't back down. If I'd back down, Hashem knows I'm basically, you know, abandoning, forgoing my Masorah, which is totally the most, you know, that's my life is about maintaining the Masorah. So how could I do that? I'd be, even if I wouldn't do it even if everyone's laughing because I care about what Hashem thinks and Hashem knows that my integrity is all I have and therefore I'm sticking to my guns. And more than that, he says, a second reason, even if, for whatever reasons, I would be convinced that you're right and I'm wrong, now that you put it the way you put it, that if I'd be back down, I'd be appointed the Av Bezdin, so I'm certainly not going to back down. Shelo yu omrim bishvil sarara chazar bo. Because even if I'd back down for, I'll call it good reasons, meaning that I wouldn't be a rush with the Yamakom. Hashem wouldn't think badly of me because I have good reasons why I'm backing down. I can't back down anymore because people think the only reason I back down is because I wanted to have power. And that's terrible. It's a terrible Chil Hashem. People think I'm for the sake of, you know, for Sarar, for authority, for power, I'm going to, you know, compromise my principles. No way. So that's not going to happen. But anyways, what did happen? So we had these four opinions. Huhaya Omer. Sorry. Huhaya. He used to be Metame Sa'ar HaPakuda. He would render, I'll translate literally for a second. He would render Tame, deposited hair, something like that. Vedam hayarok, and an orange blood. So the two cases are unrelated. Let me do one at a time. The first has to do with negaim. A nega, you know, this white spot, tsara'as. So for a mitzorah to be confirmed, there's a muchlet, they need to be confirming signs that the nega, the white patch of skin, is indeed a source of tumah. And that would be typically either the hairs inside of the nega turn white, or that it's growing, pisyon. So the thing is that the white hairs can't be there from before. It has to be that the nega was there and caused the hairs to turn white. So the question is, what happens if you have nega number one, and then the hairs turn white in that patch of skin, but the nega heals itself? So the nega's gone, but the white hairs remain. They've been deposited, so to speak, from the previous nega. That's sa'ar hapakuda, deposited hairs. And then a new second nega, a new second beharis, a new tzaras, affliction spot appears, and in the same place. So the white hairs are there already, prior to the second one appearing, but they only turned white because of the first one. So is that considered to be a sign of tumah, never tameh, or not? So he, Akab bin Halal, said, yes, it is. It's a source of tumah, but the rabbi said, no, it isn't. They understand based on the drasha, the pasuk requires that it has to have turned white, but it has to have turned white specifically from, the pasuk says, vehi hafcha se'ar levan, and it, the nega, turned the hair white. So they understand it has to be the specific nega in question, meaning in this case it would be the second nega, and the second nega didn't. The current nega didn't turn the hairs white, therefore it's tahor. That's the first machlokas. Second machlokas has to do with the color of blood for dam nida. So Mishnah Nida says there are five colors of blood that are tameh colors. Four of them are shades of red. The fifth is black, and the idea is that the blood, like over time, will turn black. So the fifth color black is the assumption that it was came out as regular blood, uterine blood, but then it turned black afterwards. The question is, what's with dam hayarok? I'll translate that as orange, okay? The reason why I'm saying orange is because the Rosh, others bring two descriptions of what this color is. One is that it is like the color of an egg yolk. Now, I know egg yolks that you look at in America are bright yellow, but the color of the egg yolk depends on what you feed the chicken. Soy and corn-fed chickens have bright yellow egg yolks, but if you look at a chicken that has, so to speak, like a rich, varied diet, as chickens would be if they're wandering around eating random stuff, grass-fed and eating who knows what as they walk around. So those egg yolks are much more orange. You'll see if you go traveling to some place that doesn't have, soy corn-fed chickens, that it's orange in color. So that's why I'm saying orange. The second description the Rosh brings is that it's leaning towards like the color of the ruddy color of gold. So gold, of course, gold also is yellow, and if it's pure form, but they typically alloyed gold to make it harder. The typical alloying of gold with copper makes what's called red gold, and it's like a coppery, orangey color. Okay, so again, dam yarok is orange. You'll note that in antiquity, almost no countries, no civilizations had a word for the color orange. Even your language, English, didn't have a word for the color orange until the fruit came around, and we named the color after the fruit, not the other way around. They would not have had oranges in the time of the Mishnah in the Middle East, and so on Europe to the Middle Ages, and therefore they didn't have that. But anyway, so Yarok means here, I think it means orange, and Akavia says that's red blood that turned orange, like the same kind of way it could turn black, could turn orange, and the Chum say no, if it's not notal admumis, if it doesn't have like a red tinge in it, then it's not tame. Okay, Halach will be like the Chum, both those opinions, that's the Torah Paskins. But anyways, well, fine. So that's that. Now, moving on. Hu haya matir sa'ar b'chor b'cho mum shenashar v'inichu b'chalon v'achar kach shachatu v'cham osrin. Explain that. Let me explain that first. This is the third issue. The issue here is got to do with the hair that comes, or the wool, whatever, that comes from a b'chor. A b'chor, a firstborn male cow, goat, or sheep. The petar rechem, the first initiating of the womb, if you will, of these animals has to be given to a kohen. It's brought as a korban b'chor, and the kohen will eat it. Now, if the b'chor animal gets a mum, a blemish, that invalidates it, so it can no longer be brought as a korban, so then the kohen still has rights to ownership of the animal. He can just simply shecht it and eat it. But it has a vestige of sanctity, meaning all he can do is kind of shecht and eat it. He can't work it or shear it. Okay, so you can't shear your sheep if it's a b'chor sheep. You have to just shecht it, and then you can eat it. But once you've shechted it, and at that point, the hides are yours to make use of, you, the Kohen, and therefore any wool on the hide also is yours to make use of. So the wool after the shechita becomes permitted. Question is, what's the status of wool that fell out while the animal was alive? So the Chum are going to hold that wool is usser. Okay, it's usser even after the fact, meaning even after the animal's been shechted and the other wool that's attached to its hide is permitted, the wool that fell out beforehand is forbidden. They were concerned that if you let the wool be permitted, people essentially would they wouldn't shecht their sheep, they'd let their hair grow so they could get wool, and stuff would fall out and so on, and ultimately they might even make the mistake of actually shearing it, which would be forbidden. So the point is, I said, no, the wool, even the wool that fall out by itself, is forbidden, and therefore there's no incentive to let your sheep, or goats for that matter, or cows, linger about. You check them promptly, which is what we want to happen. Akavia said, no, it's true that while the animal is alive, you can't make use of the wool, but once it dies and you shechted it, so just as the wool that's attached to its hide is permitted, so too the wool that fell out before it died is permitted as well. And therefore he said you could sort of keep the wool in like a cubbyhole, like a windowsill, and that fell out by itself, and after the animal's been shechted, you can then make use of that wool. Inside again, the Mishnah, I'll read it one more time. Hu haya matir sa'ar b'chor balmum. He would permit, Akav ben Mahalala would permit the hair of a b'chor animal that was a balmum, shenashar, that fell off while it was alive. The nichol b'chalon, and then the owner put, of the Kohen, let's say, he put that wool that fell out in a windowsill, a cubbyhole, whatever it is. B'achar kach shachatu, and then you shech the animal, and then now the wool that was stored becomes permitted. But the chacham osen, the chacham say, no, you can't. Okay, the fourth and final one is as follows. It's talking about giving the maim hamarim, the bitter waters that we administer to a suspected sota to see if she really was infidel. The backstory, very briefly, I'm sure you know it, but I want to emphasize a single point here, is that if a woman is suspected by her husband of improprieties and he says, don't be with that man anymore, and then she's found up after that, after that warning, she is found again to have been secluded with him. So now, stira, so then now we assume that she was adulterous. If she insists she's innocent, so now the husband, how can he trust her again? Hashem, for the sake of fostering peace and reestablishing that relationship between husband and wife, essentially performs a miracle by having this process where if she's guilty, she'll die from drinking these bitter waters. It's a combination of water plus some dirt from the floor of the Beis Mikdash, some psukim that are Hashem's name is erased, included in Sukkim that have Hashem's name on parchment that is erased in the water, and it's called bitter waters according to some. There's something bitter added to it to make them taste bitter. Others, than bitter means it's a bitter effect. And she drinks it, and if she survives drinking it, then she was innocent, and then they can live happily ever after, and Hashem bless them with children and so on. Okay, but the point of the sota waters is really so that we will be able to reestablish a broken relationship. That's the idea of Hashem putting peace between a husband and wife, because the husband doesn't try to trust the wife more because of whatever happened. Now, the question is, do we do that same procedure for women who didn't start out being Jewish, but they converted it later in life? And there are two kind of categories of converts. There's the primary convert, the Gioris. There's also what I kind of refer to as like the backdoor convert, where a woman started out being a non-Jew. She then became what's called a shifcha, a slave owned by a Jew, and there she becomes like, goes to a mikvah and becomes like a quasi-Jew as a shifcha. And she's obligated to mitzvahs like a Jewish woman, but she's not Jewish yet. If she's emancipated, Mishtachreres, so then she becomes now like a full-blown Jew. Okay, so it's kind of like a conversion. So the question is, are those women eligible for drinking the bitter waters of the Sota as well? And the reason why there's a discussion is because the Pasuk says, Yitin Hashem oscha la'ala l'shvua. Hashem will make the woman who participates in this, like, you know, proverbial legendary, and people will refer to her as like, you know, for cursing others, whatever it is. Besoch ameich, amongst your people. Now, does this mean the people from which they came, or the people which they currently belong to? Because a woman who was a convert, who started out being a Gentile, now she's a Jewess. So is her amich, is the pasuk her nation referring to her original, where she came from? You know, she originally came from Poland, she's Polish, but now she's converted to being Jewish. Or do we say, no, she's converted, now she's Jewish proper, and the pasuk is talking about the Jew, besoch amich, Jews, your current nation. So Kaviv ben Malal understood that you cannot give it to a convert because her original nation is not Jewish, and this is the pasuk referring to your original nation. Whereas the chacham and the halacha is no. Now that she's converted, she belongs to the Jewish people in every sense, and therefore besoch chamech would be appropriate, and she's included, and she could drink from those waters. That's the machlokas here. Inside the Mishnah says, Hu haya omer, Akavi ben Malali also said, Ein mashkin lo es a gioris v'lo es shifcha ha-mishuchreres. We don't give to drink the bitter waters of a sota, neither to a female convert, nor to a female slave woman who was subsequently emancipated. V'chacham omrim mashkin, the chacham say, yes you can, based on the understanding of besoch ha-mech, like I said before. Now, the Mishnah goes on to have a discussion about this last point. Amru lo, the rabbi said to Akavia, we have a precedent that shows that you are incorrect. Maase, it once actually happened, Bekarkamis Shifcha, Hamashukhreres, there was a woman named Karkamis, or she was from this place, And she was an emancipated slave woman. She was in Jerusalem. And the Bezdin of Shmaya and of Talion, they were the Nasi and the Av Bezdin who preceded the generation of Hillel and Shammai. And they were actually converts themselves. Okay? And they gave this woman, Carcamus, the bitter waters to drink. So you see a precedent that even though she was a Shifcha Meshuchreres, she is entitled to drink from the bitter waters. Amar Lehem, so Akiva said back to them, Dugma Hishkua. Now that's a strange expression, it's hard to understand. Dugma means like something similar, and Hishkua gave her to drink. So the first pshat in the Bar Tanurim, we'll stick to that for a moment here, is basically they said, yeah, because they were like her, meaning they were also converts, like she's a convert. And his point isn't something along the lines of, you know, what do you expect from a convert or something. That's not at all what it means. These are the good Olei Ador. What he meant was that really, Akavi meant, is that really Me'ikar Adin, they shouldn't have given her to drink. But because they were driving this other, like, you know, I'll call it pro-convert agenda, they didn't want to treat her differently, and therefore they were blinded by it, and therefore they gave her to drink because they were like her and sort of had sympathies with the converts and wanted them to be treated like regular members of Klal Yisrael. Now, that's a pretty terrible accusation to, you know, lodge against the Gedolei Ador. And therefore, the Niduhu, they, the Chachamim, put Akiva ben Mahalalel into Nidui. Nidui is like the least of the forms of excommunication. Basically, looks like a person is behaving as if he was sort of sitting in sitting Shiva. So he's like, you know, can't cut his hair, typically 30 days, and they can't wash their clothing, and they can't count the dominion, and no one can sit within Dalai Lama's of them. So that's the Nidui situation, and it's the typical punishment that's received when a person insults or disrespects the Rabbanim. Now, if the Shemayin HaTalin were alive, then it would be their prerogative. They could either stand up for their kavod and put him into Nidui or not. But since they're no longer alive, the current Bezdin here in question felt they had an obligation to stand up for the kavod of the Chum, and therefore put Akiva ben Mahalalel for making such an unacceptable accusation, disrespectful accusation against Shemayin of Talion. Says the Mishnah further, Umeis b'niduyo, and he, Akiva ben Mahalalel, died in the state of Nidui. V'saklu Bezdin Arono. And the Bezdin actually put a rock. L'sakel means, you know, it's a stone, but it doesn't mean they threw rocks at his coffin. It means they put a rock symbolically on his coffin to indicate that he died in this state of, you know, of Nidui, of being excommunicated, to reflect, you know, and they want to make a point here of how unacceptable what he did was. Period. Now, on that point, Amar Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda says, Chas v'shalom she'kavya nisnada. God forbid that Akiva ben Mahalalel was put into Nidui. You got the story wrong. Because she'ein azar nin eles b'fnei kol adam yisrael b'chochmo v'yiras chet k'Akiva ben Mahalalel. Which literally means the gates of the azar never closed on a person in Israel who was as great in terms of his wisdom or his fear of sin as Akiva. This is referring to the fact that back in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Korban Pesach was brought. They brought in three groups, Kitos, and they would come into the Azara. The doors would be closed in the first group, and then they would do the Korban, and then the second and third group. The point is the doors are closed on the who's who of Klal Yisrael who are coming to participate in the Korban Pesach. And the point is no one even could size up to Akiva ben Mahalalel in terms of Chochma and Yira. The Bar Tanur's Giras, by the way, is Anava and Yira's Chet. Boy, that's Chachman Yir's Chet or Anavan Yir's Chet. The point is, he was a superstar. There's no way they would have put him into Nidui. So the way that Tos Yontov learns is that the Bar Tanur gave a second shot on what it meant to say Dugma Hishkua, the likeness they gave her to drink. It means, according to the second shot on the Bar Tanur, and this is how Rabbi Yehuda is learning what Akiva meant when he said it, was that they gave it was like a replica. Dugma, a replica, a fake of the Mayim Hamarim, the bitter waters. Meaning it wasn't, they didn't actually give her the bitter waters because, they're not allowed, it says Akiva, because she wasn't allowed to receive it, but they gave her, they faked her out. They gave her something which she thought, which looked like the bitter waters, hoping that it would induce her to admit before she drank. And that's why, says Rabbi Yehuda, it wasn't so disrespectful. He's explaining Akiva Shita, and he wasn't saying anything terrible about Shmaya and Avtalion, and that's his explanation why the precedent's not a precedent, because Shmayan of Talion, in fact, did not give a convert or a Shivcha Meshukharist to drink from the bitter waters. Okay, so that's the machlokas there of what happened. In any case, according to Rabbi Yehuda, someone else went into Nidui and died like this. So who's that? So says the Mishnah further. Ves mi Nidu, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who was the one who got into Nidui? That was Elazar ben Chanoch, a different person. Shepikpek b'taharas yadayim. He kind of made fun of the notion of taharas yadayim, that your hands could become tamei or tahor, independent of your body. Normally, midoraisa, either a whole person's entire person, his whole body, including his hands, is tamei or tahor. It's a package deal. But the rabbis instituted this idea of your hands becoming tamei, independent of a tahor body. There's all Maseches Yadayim for that, and he rejected it altogether. So since he made fun of it, Elazar ben Chanoch, so then they put him into Nidui. And Ukeshemes, when he died, Elazar ben Chanoch died, so then Shalchu Bezdin Venichu Evenal, Aron of the Bezdin put a rock on his coffin to indicate that he was died in this situation of disrespect to the rabbis. Malamed, to teach you, shekol ha-misnadeh umeis b'niduyo, to teach you that anyone who was put into nidui, into excommunication, and he dies in that situation, soklin es arono, symbolic, they put a rock on his coffin when he's buried, to let people know that he died in that situation.